time, we're going to begin the House Special Committee on Fisheries teleconference on the U.S.-Canada Salmon Treaty, and I will turn the microphone over to Representative Herman.
Yes, this is Representative Adeline Herman, Chairman of the Special Committee on Fisheries. At this time, I'd like to call the meeting to order and have the record note that present are Representative Jack Fuller, Representative Charlie Bussell, Representative Jack McBride, and Representative Grusendorf. Welcome to the Special Committee on Fisheries, second teleconference on the proposed U.S.-Canadian Salmon Treaty. At our first teleconference on this subject, last Tuesday, we had over 25 people testify from the sites and still had some 10 to 15 waiting. Today, we hope to hear all those who were unable to get to last week, plus any new people who want to testify. I should preface the teleconference with two pieces of information. In the news over the weekend, the story indicates that the Canadian trawlers are in favor of the proposed treaty. It appears that the committee will be adopting the Senate Resolution SGR 10 to convey our position to the governor and our U.S. senators. It is important that you also get your individual comments to both the governor and your U.S. senators. And you can send your comments to the following addresses: Governor Bill Sheffield, Pouch A, Juneau, Alaska, 99811. Senator Ted Stevens, United States Senate, Washington, D.C., zip code 20510. And Senator Frank Murkowski with the same address. And I'll repeat these addresses at the end of today's teleconference. We'll start the teleconference with Commissioner Don Collinsworth of the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. He'll present an overview, or we'd like him to present an overview or update on what is happening with the governor's task force on the treaty. And after that, we'll go into regular testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I have just a couple of Thank you, Madam Chairman. I have just a few remarks to make. The task force has been working with the support of the staffs of the Department of Fish and Game and the staff of the National Marine Fisheries Service. We have gone through a very detailed and review, rather lengthy review of the treaty. We took the draft language as it was initialed off and the draft that most of you have in hand, and compared that to the language that the negotiating party left with in early December, with also with an understanding of the intent of the negotiating group when they left in early December. We have then gone through the treaty line by line, from the introductory paragraph through the letters from the negotiator. We have highlighted all those differences. We have gone through a very elaborate exercise of trying to identify specifically what all of the various constituency groups have indicated areas of concern. There has been a lot of dialogue on the issue, starting early in January, when the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council and the Board of Fisheries held a joint hearing here in Juneau on the subject. A great deal of testimony was forthcoming at that time. There have been several other forums, including the previous teleconference, where other individuals had an opportunity to make their comments. We have also have been in personal contact with many fishermen's organizations and individuals who have, on the telephone and in person, identifying what they believe to be problems with the initial draft. we have cataloged all of these issues. The staff have, we've gone through all of the letters that we have received. We've gone through all of the notes that we have taken at the various hearings and the teleconference, and have cataloged these into groups of comments. We think that we have a good understanding of what the constituents' concerns are with the treaty, and there frankly are many, as you probably know. We are now in the process of validating those concerns. We will be meeting this week with a fairly small number of individuals that represent the major user groups, including probably a combination conference call with the task force from representatives on the Yukon. The purpose of this meeting is not to hold additional public hearings, these meetings that we have scheduled for this week, but simply to sit down with the various representatives of the major organizations to ensure that we have validated or to validate their concerns, that we have not misinterpreted their written comments, and that we fully appreciate their position. The next step will be to recommend a list of issues for the governor to consider. The issues being those that we see that that are essentially the summary of the major comments that have been provided to us. We will then try to categorize these issues as to whether they're major issues or whether technical issues or editorial type issues. And then we will be meeting with the governor early next week to present to him our report. That's just kind of a brief summary of the process we've been through. It's again, it has been a very deliberative process. And then we will be meeting with the governor early next week to present to him our report. That's just kind of a brief summary of the process we've gone through. It's again, it has been a very deliberative process, trying to ensure that we have a good understanding of all of the concerns. And I might point out there are many, but. Really, the purpose of my attending this teleconference today is to see if any of the individuals participating in the conference can identify any new concerns or any new alternatives that we might want to propose. That's all I have, Madam Chairman.
Thank you for your comments. Are there any questions from the committee? Representative McBride.
Yes, Madam Chairman. Thank you. Will you provide any recommendations at all or any alternatives that might answer any of the problems that might have come up?
Yes, we anticipate identifying the specific problem areas and suggested perhaps suggested alternative solutions or alternative language.
Representative Fuller.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Commissioner, is there any time frame that you could give us that you might share what you come up with this committee?
Representative Fuller, we will be making our report to the governor, I anticipate, on Monday next. And at that time, there will be a number of alternatives that we'll be discussing. And I presume that the governor will release his position.
Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you, Commissioner Collinsworth.
This time we'll go to our first site. Our first witness is in Anchorage, Henry Mitchell. Pardon me, David.
Marcus Miakatut is joining you.
Okay. Our first witness is in Anchorage, Henry Mitchell. Go ahead, please.
Now, Madam Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Henry Mitchell with the Bering Sea Fishermen's Association. I did speak to you last week concerning our problems with the proposed treaty. I would, though, like to know if it would be possible to ask Commissioner Collingsworth a question about his previous comments.
Go ahead, Henry.
Commissioner Collingsworth, you mentioned that you would be having a meeting with numerous fishing groups, including the Yukon fishing groups, this week. Could you give me the date and time of that meeting, please?
Henry, Steve Fenoyer has been acting as facilitator on this, and I understand that he's going to be contacting Representative Vasca and Mr. Cohen, and determining who else should participate with that group, and we'll get on the phone with them whenever we can get them together this week. A firm date has not been set at this point.
Thank you very much. I would like to add that the other day when the Senate held a hearing on this issue, their Senate resolution had been amended. I guess there was a committee substitute, and they had added the language concerning the Yukon. Does your committee have that language, and if you do, could you read it over the air at this time?
One moment.
Okay. Could I ask him a question?
Go ahead.
Henry, do you have the, this is Fuller, do you have the committee substitute before you, over?
No, I don't have a committee substitute. I have Senate Joint Resolution number 10 only.
Okay, Henry, I believe this is the whereas clause that was added to the Senate Joint Resolution. It says, whereas although the provisions of the proposed treaty addressing Yukon River salmon require an accounting of United States and Canadian interests in those salmon prior to the effective date of the treaty, the United States and Canada possess virtually no biological information upon which to base such an accounting. Okay?
Yeah, fine. That's exactly the type of information that we gave the committee last week. I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to address you again.
You're welcome.
Yeah, it's page 2, line 2 for the members of the committee.
Our next witness is in Wrangell, Bruce Eagle. Go ahead, please.
Chairman, my name is Bruce Eagle. You heard from me last week, representing myself, my organization as a fisherman. Today I'm here representing Southern Southeast Regional Outpost Association. I have been asked by the association, in my role as chairman of the regional the regional planning committee, to convey the following to you. As many of the other state associations, is unique in the United States and in Canada. We were formed by fishermen to produce fish to enhance our own livelihoods. We pay approximately 3% of our gross stock every year to our association in the form of a tax. This represents considerably more than 3% when you look at our net income. We've done this willingly. What we are trying to do is to produce more fish so that we can continue fishing and to arrive at historic levels of fishing in Southeast Alaska. We presently have one hatchery in operation, are in the construction phase of another, and in the planning stage of another. In addition, we are involved presently in lake fertilization. What our association has done is has looked at the implications of the treaty as it affects us, as people producing fish to be caught. Article 3, paragraph 1, says, it shall provide to each party to receive benefits equivalent to its production originating in its waters. What this means to us is that no matter what entity produces the fish, whether it's British Columbia, the state of Washington, the state of Oregon, or the state of Alaska, those fish will flow through to that party irregardless of where they roam. It's irregardless of whose estuary they use to rear in, whose ocean pasture they use. We feel this is wrong. Article 5 states that all enhancement programs that may be established will be conducted subject to the provisions of the article I just read. Also, each year, parties shall provide to the other party and to the Commission all information pertaining to the operations of and plans for existing projects, plans for new projects, and its use concerning the other party's salmon enhancement project. But the effect of this is to control the number of fish that are subject to interception out of the other country by limiting its aquaculture activities. Since our organization must pass its fish through to its constituents, to its fishermen, who are paying in excess of $1 million a year in assessment, we have adopted the following position. The draft U.S.-Canada Salmon Treaty has the following implications for SSRAA. All future enhancements will be reviewed by the Northern Panel. Production of our present facilities will be reviewed yearly. There will be limitations placed on the number and locations of fish production as it affects interception rate. The review process will add considerable time to our permitting process and also add one more level of government control. Here are where we feel are our needed changes. The production of enhanced fish and the right of harvest must be separate issues. The state of Alaska, because of our geographic location on the migratory pattern of salmon, must have provisions for the increased harvest based on our production of hatchery salmon. Language in the treaty that defines harvest levels and percentages must define harvest levels and percentages instead of in numbers. We have an additional list of what we consider must changes. If any one of these changes were not made, we feel we would not be in favor of the treaty. The right for the state or province to produce fish at this time shall not be subject to review by either the panel or the commission. The harvest of enhanced fish, where it does not affect the interception rate, shall not be subject to review. When the production of enhanced fish affects the ability of the other country or state to harvest its own fish, then the producing party does not have the right to claim 100% food benefits. Southern Southeast Regional Aquaculture Association has gone on record as opposing ratification of the treaty unless it can be modified to meet the needs of Alaskan fishermen to gain benefit of their own enhancement. If I may have another 2 or 3 minutes, I'd like to go through and explain the reasons why we've asked for these changes.
Proceed.
The production of an enhanced fish and the right of harvest should be considered as two separate issues, because without this provision, we cannot go ahead without approval of the commission with our projects that we presently have in the planning process, which would add a great deal of fish to the southern southeast fishery. We also feel, because of our location on this migratory pattern of salmon, that the fish that are produced south of us, that is British Columbia and Washington, are using our rearing areas that we could use in the future for the production of our own salmon for the benefit of our state. We are providing essentially free pasturage for these fish. We know from our own experiences that we are experiencing quite different rates of return from different sites that we have. It can be as low as 3%, as high as 10. This means that the numbers vary by almost a 3-to-1 ratio. Under our must changes, we feel it is our right and our need to produce fish at this time. We are spending considerable dollars, our own dollars to be sure, but the state is doing the interim financing for us. We have one facility in Ketchikan where we are approaching in the $5 million mark, and we have another one that is halfway through construction where we've invested in excess of $1 million. Besides this, we have put in nearly $400,000 into lake fertilization for sockeye. None of these benefits would accrue to us if this treaty now goes forth. We feel that the harvest of enhanced fish, where it does not affect the interception rate, should not be subject to review. The case of this would be where salmon are harvested close to a hatchery. Many times these numbers have been included in the Canadian numbers as they view our fishery. We feel that while they should not even be reviewed or included in the fish that the commission looks at, we don't feel that commission should have the right to review those numbers. When the production of enhanced fish affects our ability to harvest our own fish, we must claim rights to some of those fish. If either Canada or the states of Washington and Oregon produce large numbers of enhanced fish, either through hatcheries or some other means, they can displace us from the fishing ground. For instance, if the Skeena River run of sockeye is tripled, we will essentially be down to one day of fishing. What we have assumed in the planning for CERA is that we would have a great number of days to fish and would effectively harvest our fish in the common property fishery. This is what we have done in the past. Our harvest rates are nearly 70%. If this treaty goes through, then the vast majority of the fish would show up at our hatcheries, where they could not be utilized as we had planned. This is why we have gone on record as being opposed to the ratification. We feel that any treaty must meet the needs of Alaskan fishermen to gain the benefits of their enhancement programs that they have planned for and paid for. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments, Mr. Eagle, and we'd also appreciate your comments in writing.
Our next witness is Richard Kowalski in Sitka. Go ahead, please.
As Richard Kowalski in Sitka, I'm a power troller in Southeast. I'll make my comments brief, just stating that back totally the Senate Joint Resolution Number 10 and the rejection of this paper, I'll call it a treaty. I don't see any benefit for the American fishermen in general, the Alaskan fishermen in particular, has taken the short end of the stick for 3 years now with Canada. I don't see any reason to continue this line of thinking whatsoever as far as negotiations are concerned. I want to see Canada coming across during the season to come and a little bit more, a whole lot more consideration for our conservation efforts. That's about it from here. Thank you.
We appreciate your comments, Mr. Kowalski.
Our next witness is in Haines, Dorothy Bossman.
Yes, this is Dorothy Bossman. I am secretary for several fishing organizations, Organization for Lynn Canal Fishermen's Rights, Upper Lynn Canal Advisory Committee, and secretary to the Southeast Alaska Regional Council. I would like to address first the impact to the Haines area and the Upper Lynn Canal. Although Haines is not directly affected by transboundary systems or lowered allocations, Haines would suffer from the following factors because of lowered allocations down southern, southeast, and other areas. Although Haines is not directly affected by transboundary systems or lowered allocations, Haines would suffer from the following factors because of lowered allocations down southern, southeast, and other areas. Large amounts of effort would appear up here, Many, many boats would move up north to this area with large amounts of gear. And this shift of gear would start much earlier. The gillnet fishery is already depressed, along with trolling, and possibly the seiners with Noise Island, if it comes about. The economy of the local area will worsen, as in many other areas of Southeast. It is my understanding, aside from the Haines area, of course, our fishing fleet is made up primarily of gillnetters. They're throughout Southeastern, there are 491 drift gillnet permits. And if that effort all came up here, it would be a real impact to our fishery. In the treaty, Tree Point, well, to us, Tree Point is a major area for gillnetters. An adjustment of the harvest in that area would require spelled out flexibility. The Canadians, I'm assuming, are refusing to hold their take of 35% in the Stikeen system. Both the Stikeen and the Taku seem to have many, many, many years of historical background in Alaska fisheries. And apparently these are new fisheries to the Canadians. The next thing is that implementation of the commission or commissioners under the treaty would put yet another layer of federal control upon us. And it is assumed that it would curtail the ability of the Alaska Department of Fish and Game resource managers to provide in-season management. And implementation of the commission under the treaty would reduce the regulatory and management powers of the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. And being secretary to the Southeast Alaska Regional Council, it would seem as a subsidiary of the State Board of Fisheries, we're really concerned about this. At this time, we have a choice. Treaty or no treaty. And at this time, no treaty would certainly be better than a treaty that we cannot live with. And with this one, we can't live. The language certainly needs to be modified and spelled out in the treaty. If through reading the treaty, you may come upon Canadian language terms such as pieces instead of fish. Of course, maybe they mean Pisces. I understand that negotiations have been going on for a long time. But this treaty has not come into the public eye until recently, and I do appreciate all of the teleconferences and the help that's coming from all the different areas. I would like to quickly read a position paper that was addressed to the governor. It might take a minute, but there are many areas that don't know what the Southeast Regional Council did. The Southeast Regional Council, comprised of the chairman of the local Fish and Game Advisory Committee from 16 Southeast Alaskan communities, request that you demand that the current draft of the treaty between the U.S. and Canada concerning Pacific salmon not be submitted to the U.S. Congress for ratification. While embracing the need for a coastwide agreement on the conservation and utilization of Pacific salmon, we cannot support the current draft, which fails to provide for equity and the continued viability of our commercial and sport fisheries. Among the areas within the treaty that we find unacceptable are 1, the allowable harvest of Chinook salmon for Southeast Alaska is not sufficient to maintain an economically sound troll fishery. This will result in the displacement of many persons and long-term economic hardship on fishermen and numerous Southeast communities dependent upon revenues generated from the fishery. 2, there is no mechanism in the treaty to ensure that Southeast Alaska fishermen will be able to realize the benefits of our enhancement programs that are just now beginning to show significant contributions to our fisheries. For example, sockeye harvest ceilings placed on several southern Southeast net fisheries are likely to be non-negotiable in the mechanics of this treaty. 3, respective catch percentages for transboundary rivers are not adequately spelled out, thus allowing for expansion of Canadian in and panels months in advance. Alaska needs to retain the ability to manage for unpredictable fluctuations in returns. 5. While this treaty deals primarily with interception fisheries, it chooses to ignore the West Vancouver Island troll fishery. Although allusions are made to the desirability of holding this area to the catch level for the past few years, specific language must be included in the treaty to control the interception of this fishery. And 6. And last, interception of salmon by foreign, and in parentheses other than U.S. or Canadian, and out of parentheses fleet, is not addressed in the treaty. This problem has significant impact on the decisions being made in this document, and provisions for dealing with this problem must be included. The preceding items are some of the more obvious deficiencies that we've found in the current draft. Other fishery groups, legislative bodies, and individuals are also making their views known, and we are in support of many of their specific concerns. In conclusion, we feel that the negotiations leading up to this document constitutes a poker game in which Canada effectively stacked the deck and played their hand from a position of strength. While the U.S. has shown coastwide concern for our salmon resources and instituted numerous unilateral conservation measures, the Canadians, in the face of severely depressed stocks, have continued to expand their fisheries efforts to better their bargaining position. Now is the time to call them to task for these efforts and demand equity for our fishermen so that we will continue to be a mainstay for the economy of Southeast Alaska. We request that you do not endorse this draft of the treaty and that the state of Alaska and the U.S. federal government take the input of concerned user groups back to the bargaining table to hammer out a treaty that we can all live with. And thank you. Those are our comments.
Thank you very much for your comments, Dorothy, and I do have a copy of your position paper letter to Governor Sheffield, and I'll see that all the committee members get it.
Our next witness will be David Piper in Texas. Go ahead, please.
I'm Mr. Derby.
Okay, then Mike Swann.
No, I'm just observing also.
Do you have a participant that you testify to?
No, I don't believe there's anybody who can testify at this time.
Thank you.
For those of you in Ketchikan, I would want to point out that I just a half hour ago left Sam Murkowski, and I think he is headed for Ketchikan tomorrow. The point of discussion this afternoon had to deal with the Canadian use of our harbors, and we discussed the concept of the United States adopting identical customs regulations in regard to the use of our harbors and the presence of fishing gear on deck when Canadian vessels are in our waters, and it is his opinion in response to that to be supportive and to push the customs officials to initiate actions to adopt essentially the Canadian customs regulations, so that, as I understand it from the fishermen in Ketchikan, that would essentially eliminate the problems that we've had in Mizon and Chatham down in that area. And as far as the wintertime, the Canadian negotiations, it begins a small step in behalf of the United States and Alaska to let the Canadians know that we are no longer going to be so open and leave it entirely up to them to play our issues in these negotiations. I just wanted to point that out to you so that when the good senator is there,
Mr. Waller did not stay for this. That was my mistake. Since we have no further participants, could I also go offline?
Yes, I do. Then next we will go to Petersburg for Chris Justin.
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Chris Justin. I'm a college scholar in Petersburg. And before I start my testimony, I would like to ask you if you have the handout from the Fish and Game that is entitled Selected Information and Background Data on Proposed United States, Canada, Pacific, Salmon Treaty with Special Emphasis on Fisheries of Southeast Alaska and Northern British Columbia in front of you.
Yes, you do, sir.
Okay, thank you very much. And I'll go ahead. The basic concept of the treaty involving the Southeast Salmon Fisheries must be viewed very carefully in order to maintain the rights of the state of Alaska to manage its own fisheries. As the treaty stands, we will have at the most two members on the commission. While Canada will have four and the involved federal states two. This gives us a maximum representation of 25% during the decision-making process. I can easily see our Canada management going the way of the Alaska fisheries, where we are managed by a 60%-40% split in Area 2 by international treaties. Southeast Alaska, Area 2-3, it takes 4 days to harvest by 40%. While in Canada, Area 2-3, it takes approximately 65 days to harvest if treaty allows 60%. I think this fact shows the condition of their stocks versus ours. And because of an international treaty, we Alaskans are unable to harvest our abundant resource. At the last meeting of the International Halibut Commission, the Canadians voted in mass against any quota increase. The right to manage this fishery is moved away from the state level because of an international treaty, and the same thing happened to the salmon fishery. We are Alaskans and have the right to be involved in the process of managing our fishery. This right should not be given up just for the sake of having a treaty, but should be given up for a fair treaty that protects the present and future rights of the Alaskan fishermen involved. I would also like to address another issue in light of further treaty negotiations. This is the base period contract being used to compute the net tax reduction. Representative Wentry asked last week what a fair base period would be. But before we even look at base periods, I would like to direct your attention.